Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You realize I have my No MTBF coffee mug on my desk today.
And in my drawer, and I should have it on my shirt, I have my No MTBF button.
Well, I don't expect you to wear that button while you're out kayaking in the Everglades in Florida, which is what okay. I think you're off doing, but yes. I appreciate the sentiment.
Mm-hmm. So this should be a fun topic for people to get involved in. Fred and I were just chatting before we hit the record button on this ongoing long-term journey to relegate MTBF metric into its proper place, into perspective.
Proper place, which is like not ever discussed again.
Yes. And why? Because it still is used by a lot of companies and organizations and certain departments of the military. And why is it used? Why should it not be used? Let's see if we can summarize that in a discussion, kind of refresh it with people. We've lived it for some time, and I know we share values on this, but I'd love to get the listeners involved and sort of bring this to the forefront once again so that we can continue that journey.
Well, you know, it was just yesterday I got an email from one of our listeners that was an honest question. I don't think they were trying to rile me up or do anything facetious or anything like that. I think they were in a situation where they have a product that had I think they said it was like 15 hours MTBF is where they think they were with their product. And the customer wanted to know the reliability at 30 hours. And I'm like, And the direct answer is, we'll use the reliability function for the exponential distribution, because he also said that they were making the assumptions that it was exponential. And so the teeth gnashing part was, well, you're asking the wrong question. Let's rephrase this thing and find out, actually answer the question that they want and use the data and everything else you're doing in order to understand what the customer really wants versus how to use this raft of assumptions to, and if you know anything about MTBF and the exponential distribution, if your MTBF is half of your use time, your duration, is very unlikely that you're going to have an acceptable reliability performance. I didn't run the numbers, but I think it was going to be in the about 10% chance that it would survive for the 30 hours or something like that. So I helped them answer the direct question and then tagged on, you really shouldn't be using this.
let's back up from there. Oh gosh, there's so many stories. Let me just share one story and then I've got another one I want to share, and we'll try to go back and forth on it. I was with a company a while back, and no names, of course. They had equipment that had to last 10 years. And so that was their goal. Equipment had to last 10 years. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have the budget to test it for 10 years. So they made the assumption that the equipment was exponentially distributed. It was a system, after all. And they tested each one for an equivalent of 1 year, and they just did more testing. Mm-hmm. And then assumed that it would be the same failure rate throughout. And of course, we know that's just filled with potential errors.
Well, life is so convenient if you assume an exponential distribution and constant hazard rate. I mean, life becomes glorified and easy, and testing budgets become possible and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, everything. The birds sing and beautiful.
Exactly.
But it isn't real because, and of course, here's the problem, is year 2 through 10 may have a different failure rate than year 1.
I wouldn't even say very often does. Yeah, may is not the question.
Yes.
It will be different, and it will often be different enough that the assumption is just plain wrong, that
right.
it is constant. First couple of years, it may be fairly stable and not change a whole lot. It might actually even go down. Yet it's very, very, very unlikely to be constant over any duration that you care about if you look close enough. And in big systems for 10 years, certainly not. I've never seen a system even close to being a constant hazard rate.
Yeah, I had early in my career as a reliability manager, had an intern, and we would get interns periodically at GM. And I put the intern on a project to investigate whether or not the exponential failure rate was valid or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great project because at that point in time, we had a database with all the vehicles in the world. GM would buy all the different models
mm-hmm.
and run them around the proving grounds for 100,000 miles or equivalent or 10-year equivalent. And they would root cause the problem. So it was a really good database of a wide variety of vehicles. And so we could look at the door systems and the seats and the electrical systems, and we could look at components and large systems
mm-hmm.
and analyze them. So I had this person, and they spent the better part of their semester project on this. And they looked at different components, but they also looked at systems, this type of thing. Long story short, from a system level, what we saw consistently is what we called the checkmark curve, where you would have a reduction initially, but then it would go into a longer-term checkmark, not a bathtub. And so we saw that fairly consistently on a lot of the higher systems, and really it's an aggregation of wear outs at different rates of wear out.
Well, and I think most people tend to forget that your system has a system or even a component will have up to thousands of different unique failure mechanisms, which are all simultaneously competing to cause the failure.
And
in some cases, the highest potential for failures are decreasing failure rates, and that's what we typically call that early part of the bathtub curve, or I call them early life failures now. And it shows a net decrease over time, and wow, great, we got it solved. We're heading into the flat part of the bathtub curve, but then it's the range of manufacturing errors and wear out mechanisms, poor designs, and so on. And there's literally hundreds and hundreds of ways things can wear out or increase in their risk of failure over time. And the checkmark curve makes me think there's probably two dominant failure mechanisms, one which controls the early life failures and dominates that. And then at some point, that wear out mechanism for that dominant single mechanism in the overall population, it takes off, but there's still stuff underneath those. So if you, it's keep in mind that it's a lot of competition to cause your product to fail, including your customers, the things they do to your product.
Yeah. So there's so many subtopics in here. What does a reliability engineer who understands the pitfalls to MTBF, what do they do when they're bidding on a contract or they have the customer that mandates or wants MTBF as a metric?
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? And I've been in this situation a number of times, and I have some thoughts on it,
Man.
But I'd love to hear your thoughts, Fred.
Well, I know I wrote a whole article on that. It might be over on the nomtbf.com site. What do you do when your customer, requests MTBF? And one of the things I've run into, and one of the problems with MTBF, is that customers may or may not be all that conversant with reliability, yet they know it's important, and we have to ask that question of our vendor or our supplier. So what about reliability? What's your MTBF value? And what the industry after industry has learned that if the sales engineer says, oh, we have MTBF of X, Y, Z, the customer goes, great, thank you. They check off the box. We asked about reliability. We got a number. Neither one of them knows what they're talking about or what it means or what it implies or how to interpret it. And there's all kinds of ways that's misunderstood. And then the conversation ends. So the suppliers have learned that if I put MTBF on the data sheet, I don't get as many phone calls. And if I put MTBF as my first answer, 9 out of 10 customers are happy with that and they go away. So they've learned that that's what people want. On the flip side is that when you call a vendor, if you're looking for their reliability data, we have learned as purchasers, and I'm speaking broadly and in general for not reliability professionals that know what they're doing, we know that if we ask for MTBF, they have it and I get a quick answer and I can move on to my other projects and other things I need to do. So I think we've reinforced that that's all we need and we're good without looking into where it came from or how it's been derived or what's it mean or all those other things or how valid it actually is. So what to do? One, say, well, how are you going to use this component or what do you really expect? How long do you need to use this thing and how many failures are acceptable over that duration? Immediately ask the question of, well, what do you want? So if somebody says, what's the MTBF for your product? It says, well, you seem to be talking about reliability. So how many failures over 10 years are acceptable to you? Well, they might say none, right? Or they might say economically, I understand maybe one failure out of 10 years. Well, if my MTBF value is 10 years, are they okay if you said, well, you have a 30% chance of having only one failure over the 10-year duration? Is that okay? Or I should say you have a 60% chance of having one failure or more over that period. And if you convert it to reliability and it doesn't sound good, then there's probably a disconnect about what they're asking for and what you're providing. But I usually ask right away is, well, over what duration do you want this reliability to occur? And they go, well, it's a constant failure. Well, no, it's not.
No, good advice. Here's the thing that I've done with multiple clients, and I'm sure it's very similar. First, we try to educate the customer, see if the customer feels strongly about the MTBF or would they be open to other metrics to adjust the contract accordingly or the expectations accordingly. If that doesn't work, then internally we set the correct reliability requirements and then report them. Or then once we've achieved our reliability, we characterize it, or even the ongoing, we characterize it also as an MTBF. And because if you've achieved your reliability targets, you will most likely achieve an MTBF requirement, but it's not vice versa.
Well, it not always, too. I've run into the cases where especially when you have that early life failure, MTBF value will be astronomical, right? Because the slope is below one, and so the point of MTBF is way out there of where you get your two-thirds failure point. And so it looks great. So if you actually have a product that has that early life failure dominates it over the expected duration, then it, by using reliability, it may actually look and sound worse. It's real, though, and there's value in being clear about what expectations you're setting, although the sales and marketing guys don't really like that a lot, so that's another battle. You have to say, well, what do you want? What are you trying to achieve? And I agree with you, and I've advised many people to do both internally, so you can make good decisions internally, and if the customer is by contract or is just insistent that you give them an MTBF number, give them an MTBF number that represents at least the duration that you've agreed on is the duration of interest. That's one of the big pitfalls of MTBF is people think it's a duration. They think, well, it's a failure-free period, or it's the duration over which this product is good. And good being loosely associated with few or no failures. You know, like, no, not really. Let's look at the numbers here, guys.
The other thing that I've seen, but when you have a customer that wants an MTBF number, is the lack of discussion on the elements of reliability. Mm-hmm. It focuses too much on a number. And because what's obviously it's so important is what are the functions, what are the conditions of use, what are the durations like you just mentioned, and all of those have to come together into a reliability requirement. And too much focus on MTBF as a metric de-emphasizes the other elements of reliability.
That's right. I've seen that to where an organization, they had, I don't know, 8 or 9 major functions in this product. It was a sensor array type thing. They could make their MTBF numbers assuming that they only needed one of the array of things working.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
So it might be doing 1/10 of its capability, but we made our number.
Like, yeah, yeah.
No.
or assuming or characterizing the testing with a sort of a moderate conditions of use the 98th percentile or whatever percentile you want to use, which is the more extreme conditions of use. So if you can get the results you want in testing by having really sort of middle of the road conditions of use, and none of that is correct. And this is all things that reliability people know. They know that we need to use proper testing with proper conditions of use, that type of thing. But we need to shore people up with that, I'll call it the 2-minute speech, where you're in a meeting with someone and they're bringing up MTBF. Get your arguments understood and fresh and correct so that you know how to respond in the right time, at the right place, to get the change that's needed inside of a company. And that's really where this battle will be won, is company by company, organization by organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. And there's so many different ways MTBF is misunderstood or misinterpreted or misused. But there's slightly different arguments in each case. And some of it is, I think the simplest ones, and one we talked about earlier, Carl, is that checkbox or checkmark type look to the failure pattern, where you have an increasing failure rate, for example. If you have real data that shows, hey, look, the number of returns we're getting this quarter are going to grow next quarter. Here's the actual data, and here's the nature of the failure mechanisms. It's wearing out. Some customers use it more often or more aggressively than others. Those are the first failures and so on. There's physics, there's science there. We understand the engineering of it and the math, the pattern shows that. If we convert that to an MTBF number or to an MTTF number, it smooths it out. It just looks like every quarter we should get the same number. And that's a huge mistake because then you're going to be surprised. Why are we getting all these extra failures now?
Right.
The argument there is this show that you're misfitting the line. Your projection is oversimplifying using this assumption, and it's leading you to make bad decisions. So now we're going into allocation on getting spare parts. We're not prioritizing this as something that actually needs to be fixed in the design, for example, things like that. We're making bad decisions because we're using a view of the situation that's not telling us what's going on. And every other part of our business, we strive to get accurate information on what's going on. And it's using that argument to say you have to use the best available information to make good decisions. And that's where it costs you as an organization if you don't.
Right. Another part of this, I'm actually looking at a graph of the checkmark. Mm-hmm. That we had calculated. And there are 4 underlying curves, if you will, that go into that checkmark. One is the features or initial performance does not meet customer expectations. So that element goes down pretty quickly. I mean, it meets or doesn't meet that initial performance. Mm-hmm. The second one is the manufacturing or assembly generated failures. And those over time, they'll present themselves earlier. Some of them go quite a ways out into time, mm-hmm. but it tends to be less that are manufacturing generated. The third one is design generated, can't withstand the applied stresses, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That one tends to go up over time.
Yep.
And the last one is service generated. Those that are not fixed by service the first time, but are generated by service. And that tends to be level. In other words, that just depends on when the service occurs and this type of thing. Mm-hmm. You aggregate those together and you get this interesting check mark. And so that's one of the things I wanted to communicate, is that we need to look at the underlying different types of problems that occur over time, whether they're generated through manufacturing or built into the design, or whether they're performance related or what, to understand this even better.
Well, it's fundamental to what we do with failure analysis, right? If we have a field problem shows up, or we have a prototype testing failure, it shows up, or even early on when we are, what are the potential failures that we are expecting to see, potential causes of failure. We spend a lot of time in organizations doing all of those things and doing all the right things. Will this affect every product? Where can we best deal with this? What's the nature of this problem? Even a lot of the discussions and textbooks around the bathtub curve is these problems tend to show up as manufacturing errors or supply errors or installation errors, things like that. These kinds of problems are design issues. These kinds of, we use those terms and those approaches so often, mm-hmm. right? But when we get to the reliability measures and we default to the MTBF one, we kind of wash all of that thinking away and just obscure it. And what that's been a bone of contention for years for me, as to why can't we elevate that discussion just by using a metric like reliability, for example, which has the four elements. What's the probability of success over a duration in this environment for these functions? If we include all those pieces in it, which MTBF is only one of those elements, and even then it's a poor representation of the probability, our discussions could fit into so many other pieces of our business naturally.
And you're right. The reliability then integrates with the other disciplines. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stand alone. And reliability should. It's part of systems engineering in terms of it's an ility that integrates with so many other disciplines. And therein, I think, is the solution to this long term, is we all need to get better at understanding what makes good metrics. It's one thing to say MTBF is not a good metric, but we all need to work on how to communicate and bring into being better metrics. And I think the summary that you gave there, Fred, is the metric. A better metric is probability, and a better reliability requirement includes the functions, the conditions of use, and the time element. And to talk about reliability without linking those things together is a mistake.
Yeah. Well said. So I tried to constrain myself, Eric Carl, because you know I could go on and on about this. So much of my opinion is out on nomtbf.com. And I know I've talked about it on many different forums and fronts. At RAMS, when I got up to ask a question, the moderator looked at me and asked, are you going to ask about MTBF? So I'm getting kind of a reputation, I suspect, around this, which is fine. On the flip side, and real quickly, is that we're getting a lot of traction. This idea that MTBF is not all that useful is, I'm getting reports on a monthly basis of companies saying we're banning it from our contract language. We're not using it internally. We are doing education across our engineering teams of why we shouldn't use it. Last year, a professor at an engineering school said she has a list of articles from NOMTBF that are required reading for your engineering students, of things. So it's making progress. I think there's more and more discussion and more recognition from industry to industry to industry. And there's hundreds and hundreds of people that are taking on that banner of, or wearing the button, for example, of saying, when I hear a discussion, I'm going to say something. When I hear there's a misunderstanding or a misuse, I'm going to correct it. I'm going to exert some ongoing pressure to help our industry do a better job. And I think it's that breadth of awareness and willingness to make a difference is gaining a lot of momentum. And that's been very, very encouraging over the last couple of years. So
very good to hear.
It's all going. Yeah, I could talk about this a lot longer. There's lots of stuff in here to deal with. So if you're listening to this and you're facing having to use MTBF in various forms or functions, you know, let us know what issues you're running into. And then if you're struggling to come up with some good, crisp arguments to help educate those around you, let us know. I can certainly point you to some good material and articles or just provide you some, here's some things to think about and bring up when you run into it. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and there you will find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Plus, I know Carl and I are both available on LinkedIn and through our About pages on Ascendo. So please do let us know what you're struggling with, and we're more than willing to help you come up with some ways to move forward and make some progress on this. So how's that sound, Carl?
Sounds very good, Fred. Nice, nice summary.
All right, great. Well, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we look forward to hearing from our listeners. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.